Good morning, everyone. Can we bring the meeting to order? I will just remind members this is the last time that the Cabinet will be played out on, in front of the cameras. Just, I think everybody's under the belief it isn't. It will be today. So just to remind people, this will be beamed out live to the internet. Okay. Welcome along, as I say. We have one apology, and that is the new religious rep, Elizabeth Morton, who unfortunately can't be with us today, but we will we'll see that the Council has agreed her, and we'll take the time to welcome Elizabeth when she comes along to the next meeting. Order of business as per the agenda.
Yes.
Okay. Any declarations of interest at this stage? Okay, any of them can be made throughout the today's meeting. Minutes of the previous meeting of the 22nd of May. Are members happy they're a correct record? Okay. Any matters arising? Okay, thank you. Item 5.1 is the appointment of the Church of Scotland representative of the Cabinet and the report by the Director. John.
Thanks, Chair. As you've already alluded to, this report invites Cabinet to note the appointment of Mrs Elizabeth Morton as the Church of Scotland rep on education matters following the Council of the 21st of August. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Can members agree to note? Okay, move on to 5.2, is an update on Children's Services budget position. Report Head of Children's Services, Mary.
Thank you, Chair. Members will be aware that there has been significant overspends within Children's Services budget in 2017-18 and within quarter one this year. This report sets out where the budget pressures have impacted on the budget. These include legislative and policy changes and secure placements. Section 3.1 to 3.2.3 outline clearly where the pressures exist. Sections 4.4 to 4.6 sets out what Head of Service and her team are doing to try to mitigate some of the high costs within the service. And in Section 6, Cabinet is requested to note the areas of overspend within the report and the cross-council approach to addressing these issues. Happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. Questions, comments? Jim?
Yeah, the... On page 24, it makes mention of the cost of the taxes for children without disabilities. Talking about tighter management, well, there has been tighter management, but the costs are creeping up. There does seem to be quite a significant increase between 2016-17 and 2017-18, from 82,000 to 142,000. Have we got sort of any clear reasons why that has such a significant increase? It has gone down slightly in the previous year, but that's a significant increase in that year. Have we got sort of reasons for that that we know of?
Okay, thank you for that. Youngsters, when they're accommodated, so if it's with a foster carer, so that they've not got a disability, but they could be with a foster carer in Dander Hall or Pennycook, but their school could be in Gorebridge or Dalkeith. So it's about youngsters where they're placed. What we would try and do is work with our foster carers to see if they would take the children to school. But bearing in mind, a lot of our foster carers have their own commitments to children. So we would try to keep a child with their host school where possible. But where it's not possible, we would move the child. But we would never move the child because of a taxi cost. It's about what's the best outcome for the child. And that's where some of the pressures come from.
Thanks for that, Mary. Any other questions? Mary and that? Okay, you can see the recommendations. We're happy to note them. Okay, thank you. Item 5.3 is the inspection of Midlothian Council Care Home Services. Alistair?
Thanks, Chair. So this report really just brings members up to date with the recent re-inspection of the care at home services within Midlothian Council, or what we refer to as reablement and complex care or home care services. This was a follow-up inspection from a previous report, and whilst a significant bit of work has been done by the teams to improve performance overall, the grades back from the inspectorate have remained as they were previous. The inspectorate did note some good feedback from service users around the care they're receiving and the support they get from the care staff, but also recognising that we had still work to do in relation to ensuring that all care plans were up to date and that they were reviewed timelessly. I would just note at this stage that this is probably a wider representation of the pressures within the care at home sector, and noting that the requirement to update a care plan every 6 months wouldn't normally fall to the reablement service, because actually people would normally be moved on from reablement. So we've had to go back and look at our processes to ensure that we're able to respond more timelously to those who've not been able to move out of reablement and into either complex care service or one of the external providers. Kind of 4.3 really just kind of sets out the kind of where we've come to so far. We have addressed some of the recommendations and requirements. We have still others to do. We work with our colleagues in HR as well to ensure that robust processes are in place. We are on target. There's an accompanying action plan that we're working to that we're kind of monitoring on a weekly basis to ensure that we're delivering against that. Challenges ahead. We'd note our disappointment at the report. We'd hoped to have seen an improvement. We have a new manager in post, and we'll bring kind of further focus to the service to make the improvements you need to do.
Thanks, Alistair. Questions, comments? Russell.
Yeah, Alistair. Just one question on the. The main report in terms of a grade 2 week, and it's talking in terms that you've got to get this sorted by the 10th September 2018. Can we have an assurance that that will be done? Thanks.
Yes, that's the team are very aware that the team made that commitment, and that was a negotiation that we had with the care inspector that we could not hang about in this and let this go on. So those have been in place, and we are keen to bring the care inspector back in again so that they are able to evidence for themselves as well and give the assurances, I suppose, ultimately to our service users and to families that we're making those changes.
It probably, Alistair, gives us in this report, if you're looking through the requirements that have been here, some of them are the recent requirements that we've been asked for. Some of these are historical. And there's a wee bit touchy deja vu here today, where I think Evelyn McHugh a couple of years ago was sitting there going through the same thing. And I think it's really important that when there is a requirement, that the reality is that requirement's met. It's no request by the care inspectorate. And it always seems to be, having been out with our carers, and that we're constantly hearing how valued the care is and how good the care is out there. We just seem to be really bad at the documentation side of that. And I think it's really important. I would like to be assured this time, and I'd like to see maybe a regular report coming to us just on what action the requirements that are asked for here are and where they are, and once we've achieved them, so that we can be sure now that the requirements are actually being met that are being asked for.
I wouldn't disagree with that, and I think it's a fair point. I suppose the only thing I would note within all of that is that we did agree to bring quarterly reports back. This was a time when we were due the quarterly report, and we replaced this with the inspection report itself and a more detailed update within the report. So we would fully intend to bring back further quarterly reports, and we'll make that commitment.
John.
Thanks, Derek. A question about scheduling. Looking at some of the feedback from staff, and I know either at council or at previous cabinet meetings, you've talked about doing review of where staff are placed and the types of packages that they're working to. Again, it plays quite a big part in this inspection report. What work has changed over the last 12 months and anything in particular since this inspection was released?
So one of the things we've introduced has been the use of smart technology. So now all the carers have handheld devices, which is should make it easier in terms of reducing their workload in terms of paper, etc. So we've moved towards that. The scheduling is always a challenge for us in relation to how we make the most efficient use of staff time and the proximity to where they are. Reablement always has that challenge, which is it's a responsive service. Therefore, when a patient or is ready to be discharged from hospital, wherever they are, we need to respond to that. And actually, sometimes responding to where someone lives can have an impact on continuity of care for someone else. So that always remains a challenge, and it's one of the reasons why we sometimes struggle to get as an efficient run as possible, and we do require, therefore, sometimes our team or carers to have to travel far, far more than we would like them to. We have tried to look at where we can move to a far more kind of joined up approach around community based approaches, but it's just not always possible with the dynamic of people coming in and out of hospital, of some very frail and elderly people, balanced against we know that continuity of care is really important.
Thanks, Derek. Just follow up. Does the council have a local working agreement with the staff? I know a lot of other authorities, you have your standard terms and conditions for all staff, and often they'll have local agreements for different pockets of staff around working hours or how shifts can change. And is there one in place for home care staff at Midlothian Council?
I'm not sure I fully understand what you mean by that, John. Sorry.
Some local authorities have local working arrangements with different pockets of staff. So they might have one for their waste team, which would cover working hours. It might be seasonal work, you know, these sorts of things. It might be looking at doing more hours one week, less hours the next week, but it's unique to that service. And lots of local authorities have these for different work groups within their staffing complement. And I'm wondering if there is a local agreement for home care staff with Midlothian Council, or is it just one set of terms and conditions and working arrangements for all the council staff across the board?
I don't have an answer to. I'm not aware of there being any separate working agreement, and I suppose I'd be slightly concerned if there was. I mean, I would need to speak to colleagues from John from Resources. I'm certainly not aware of us having any specific thing. Staff are we're very clear on. We tend to work on 21-hour week contracts because that allows a four-on, four-off rolling pattern of shifts, etc. Clearly, staff will work extra as and when if we approach them and ask. But I'm certainly not aware of any working agreement. I can take that away and come back with an answer.
Jim.
Sorry, I don't want to go back to some of these requirements that weren't met for previous inspections. As Derek said earlier, a number of these are procedural. It's about recording or lack of recording the information. Alistair, you mentioned the technological improvements that are being made within the service and handhelds and things like that. Is the provision of handhelds to our staff going to address directly some of these issues, or, you know, reporting concerns and recording them appropriately, notifying the care inspectorate or issues? Because I just feel in the past there seems to have been a lack of urgency in addressing, as Derek says, not recommendations but requirements of the care inspectorate going back to 2014, 2013, 2012. That haven't been addressed, and you know that's a serious issue. And having been involved, I know it's a different part of the service, but having been involved in the looking into what went wrong in new buyers in the past, it was all about, a lot of it was about recording. We were getting assurances that things had been dealt with in terms of previous inspections that subsequently weren't dealt with, and I just feel that there needs to be a real sense of urgency to get these previous requirements addressed. Now, you seem to be saying that they are, but I think we need evidence of that, and I think I'd like to see regular reporting. I think it's important that we get regular feedback as to how these individual issues have been addressed, just so that we can get some satisfaction elected members that that is the case.
Thanks. So what I would suggest, if it's helpful to members, is we'll take away and that we will come back within the next week against all the requirements and recommendations to give that assurance, or be absolutely clear with you where we're struggling to deliver on some of those and the reasons why. I think the last thing we need is a false sense of we're doing these when we're actually not, and I think that's unhelpful. So what we'll do to take away each of those and provide a report back to members setting out the position against each of those, and if we're not making them, the point at which we'd like to, that we expect to have them delivered, and we'll commit to deliver that within a week.
I think that would be exactly what we would be looking for in this instance. Yep. Thanks.
Alistair, can I just sort of press you slightly on that answer? When you're saying that you'll come back to us when you're not meeting them, my understanding is that if there's a requirement, there's a requirement. There's no request. It's you have to meet them. So at what stage would you ever envisage coming back and saying, well, we can't, or are you saying that technically there might be areas here that we're unable to meet, and if that's the case, what would we then do about that?
So I guess I'm not saying we won't meet the requirements. I guess what I'm saying is at one point there was the feedback we got was that we had to review 300 care plans. So that was a requirement. A requirement is that all care plans should be reviewed. We couldn't review 300 in the timescales that were set in front of us. So it's not about not meeting a requirement, as we'd set the timescale of when we'd expect to meet that requirement. So I think that the point I'm making there is that it's not that we come back to say we can't meet a requirement, it's to come back to let you know at what point we think we deliver fully against that requirement.
Okay, thank you. Jim?
To be fair, I can't quite find it in here, but when I read this report, there is a reference to being critical of the fact that elderly people, particularly with dementia, were getting different people coming to see them. There was no continuity of staff. And it's all very well for the care inspector to make that point in an inspection report, but it's extremely difficult in the current circumstances with the difficulties that we've got with recruitment to actually be able to have any kind of continuity in there. So I suppose there are some things within the report that we may want to come back and give an explanation as to why it's impossible to guarantee what they're asking for. I can't recall if that was a requirement or just a recommendation within the report, but I did see it mentioned somewhere in there.
I mean, I think there are always those challenges. I think it's far easier to come back and be challenging when you're getting fives and sixes. It's harder to be challenging when you're getting twos and threes, because I think it comes across as defensive. I mean, there's nothing in this we feel particularly good about. So I think that when we're in that better position, I think we're able to at least explain the situation on continuity of care. And I guess I picked up the other point towards Councillor Hackett, which is it's difficult at times in the reablement service to be responsive to someone needing a reduction or an increase in package of care, which sometimes the only way we can fill that is from someone from Bonnyrigg coming across to Dalkeith. Otherwise, someone stays in hospital for an extra 5 days. So there's always that kind of balance. But I'm just aware that we can be very much on the back foot when our grades are not as good as they should be.
OK, are members happy to note the recommendations? OK, thank you. Can we move on to 5.4, the Scottish Public Services Ombudsman Annual Report on the Scottish Welfare Fund. Ah, Kevin, I knew, thought I had seen you.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Chair. The report to Cabinet is to make members aware of the Scottish Public Services Ombudsman Annual Report for 2017-18 in respect of the Scottish Welfare Fund. The Scottish Welfare Fund is delivered by Midlothian Council on behalf of the Scottish Government, and it's provided to eligible applicants in the form of crisis grants or community care grants, as detailed in the report. But Lothian Council uses the published Scottish Government guidance, and I reference that because some local authorities make use of their own eligibility criteria. And in the case of an appeal against the Scottish Welfare Fund claim, which has been refused, that's initially looked at internally in a reconsideration by a team leader. However, if the claimant still disagrees with that outcome, they can ask the SPSO to review the case. Appendix 1 to the report provides the appeals data about Midlothian Council, and Appendix 2 is the full SPSO annual report. It's noted that from 13 appeal cases last year, there's been a significant reduction to 4 this year. However, there was one appeal that was upheld last year, and that's also the case this year. It's recommended that Cabinet note the SPSO annual report and also refer this on to the PRS committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. Stephen.
Thanks, Kevin. Just one question, you touched on it. The reduction from 13 last year to 4 this year, I'm hoping that's because we're getting it right first time, or the interpretation of that. Can you expand on that at all? Is there a reason for that?
Your analysis is correct. Certainly in terms of the table that is on page 49 of your papers, that's looking at the comparison between last year and this year. And indeed, whilst there was an increased number of appeals that went to SPSO last year, the results were that there was still one that was upheld from 13 and similarly from 4 of this year. The change that we made last year was to put in the additional level of the reconsideration by a team leader, and that's proved beneficial to the outcomes this year.
Okay, thank you.
Just want to follow up on that. Where appellants are unsuccessful, I take it they are receiving that information that they do have this process where they can go to the Ombudsman and
Absolutely. That's part of the standard response, is that there's the appeals mechanism internally first, and then after that, again, they're made aware that the SPSO is the second stage.
OK, are members quite happy with the recommendation set in Section 4 to note the report and to forward this to the Performance Review and Scrutiny Committee? OK, thank you. Moving on to item 5.5, diversion of public pass at Morrishbury Pennycook. Is that you, John, or is it James? John.
Thanks, Chair. At the meeting of Cabinet on the 22nd of May, the initial report relating to the diversion of the footpath to accommodate housing development at Morrishbury was approved. In the intervening period, no objections have been submitted. Therefore, Cabinet is invited to instruct me to progress the diversion order as set out in the main text of the report. If members have any questions, my colleague James Kinch, as you say, leader, is in attendance. Thank you.
Questions, comments? Happy to agree with the recommendations? Okay, thank you. Item 5.6, we're now moving on to quarterly reporting, is adult social care quarter one performance reporting.
Thanks, Chair. So, Q1 report, just highlighting some key aspects in relation to performance in adult social care. I think it's been noted previously and a reflection on earlier discussion in terms of the home care report. Whilst progress remains, good progress remains on track in relation to integration, we continue to be challenged in relation to care at home. This continues to both present challenges within the hospital in relation to support and discharge, but would also wouldn't want to lose sight of the fact that there are many people in our, there are some people in our communities who are also waiting for support. We have looked to can expand some of the team, and we had a very helpful meeting with the, some of our external providers around looking at new models of care and about how we might deliver care differently. We very much focus on a community-led model in a way that reduces staff time and actually picks up some of the points that, that we discussed previously around continuity of care as well. Some of those, the issue in terms of care at home is also driving some of our financial pressures, which means that our internal services are absorbing a lot of the work. And we've seen some real change in relation to merit as well, which is in the last 12 months, I saw a 138% increase in call-outs overnight, and majority of those driven by services that we need to put in place during the day to reduce some of those kind of pressures. Other aspects, other challenges that we have is in terms of learning disabilities and in relation to the cost of care. And we have a review team working in to review our cases at the moment and service users to see how we might deliver care differently and really think through how we use new technologies, how we embrace different ways of working in the 21st century public sector, how we might begin to deliver things in a way that still ensures people's needs are met, but very much supports our drive towards a fair allocation of care policy, where we're able to distribute that resource, that limited resource we have, equitably across as many service users as possible to ensure needs are being met. So the report really kind of sets out where we are in some of those key issues. I thought it would be helpful just to highlight where some of those challenges are, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Questions, comments for Alistair? Alistair, probably the heading for me on page 91, the emerging challenges and risks. I'm not sure when you see what's in there whether the word emerging should be in there, because they're not really emerging. They've been here a long time, and I wouldn't like it to give anybody the idea that we think that this is just something that's came along. Are there any other areas in there, Alistair, that you haven't discussed, that you have concerns about and that we're struggling to deal with any of the budgets that are out with your control?
I suppose, I guess that the key point to make is that the pressure in the service at the moment, I think, has the potential for us to overall lose faith almost in what we're trying to do in relation to integration. Because actually the point is about how we strengthen what we do within the community services, and the challenge for us is that we will need to double run some of our services before we can then switch off, whether it's an acute service or whatever, and then reinvest that money from acute back into our community services. So I think in times of actually financial challenge, we almost need that pump priming that allows us to run both. And I think that remains a key risk to us really maximising that the potential that integration will bring in relation to shifting the balance of care and moving people out of our acute hospitals and our broader institutions and into more home kind of home environments or homely environments. So that, I think that remains our biggest risk around having that almost investment and the invest to save resource to allow us to make that the true shift in the balance of care.
Okay, thanks for that. Any other questions for Alistair? Okay, thank you. 5.7, Customer and Housing Services. Kevin.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the first quarter's reporting, it's to highlight that the coverage across Customer and Housing Services within the GDPR compliance has been significant, excuse me, by the date of introduction. In terms of housing, we're developing the local housing strategy. That's based on the needs and demands analysis, which will inform the strategic housing investment plan, the SHIP, which in turn will come before Council later this year as the resources bid before it's submitted for Scottish Government. In terms of customer services, there's the work that continues in terms of online payments and services, as the OPAS will provide the foundation for our ways of working and for the digital development of services across the organisation. And in revenues, we've referenced, whilst there's been reductions across income from Water Direct, council tax reduction claims have increased, and that runs in parallel with Universal Credit, because that is a separate process of application for claimants. So whilst that's complicated that for claimants, we have good coverage there and reassurance that we're capturing people who are most in need in relation to that reduction. We've also seen in the past couple of months the change to the Dundee Service Centre for Universal Credit, so we are hopeful of establishing closer working relationships to those colleagues who will have knowledge of the Scottish arrangement rather than the service centre that we were dealing with in Wolverhampton. And we have also issued the summary warrants in June, which would then result in increased income for council tax as a result of that reminder process. In terms of challenges and risks, common to all my colleagues is in terms of the financial strategy, and whilst we have not as yet delivered full year savings, we have delivered part of those, and the remainder is detailed in the recovery plans that are being developed, similar again to my colleagues. In terms of welfare reform, there is the risk of income disruption, and that was reported through the financial monitoring of the HRA at last council. In terms of homelessness, we continue to reduce our use of bed and breakfast, and the development of Jarnock Court has had the public consultation completed in the last month, and the report for that is coming to October Council to progress with that development. And Scottish Government over the past year has had the Homelessness and Rough Sleeping Action Group, known as the HARSAG, and that's resulted in recommendations for all local authorities to submit a rapid rehousing plan by the end of the calendar year, and in turn that will be reported into Council within that time frame. I'm happy to take any questions, Chair.
Stephen. Thanks, Derek. Kevin, I'd just like to expand on the Homelessness and Rough Sleeping Action Group and their recommendations, and two of which is the rapid rehousing and Housing First. Just to establish how that's going to impact on or what impact that will have on our housing allocation review. And is there any funding coming with that?
Yes, I've made reference in the narrative there that we will need to take account of this in terms of the allocation policy review, and indeed that's work that's ongoing because that's biannual and we're committed to bringing that to Council this year, which was the case in any event. But certainly with this development, we need to take recognition of that and are likely to propose an additional percentage being allocated to homelessness. Currently, that is 45% of our lets, and we're meeting that target, but certainly with the requirements that government's expectations are that we probably have to increase that. In terms of the Housing First approach, as you say, that's one element of three within rapid rehousing. Currently, we carry out temporary accommodation. That's established and that happens in terms of support arrangements also that goes as a package for people who require that in terms of life skills and also those who may have dependencies and also in terms of mental health. So it's the appropriate support to the individual that's assessed at the time they present to us as homeless. So it's not just providing the roof over their head, it's the any support, and indeed in some cases there's no support required for people too. So the rapid rehousing plan will need to take account of not just the existing temporary accommodation, but what we're going to do differently. That is the second element, and that's people who will need additional support. And then there's a final element in terms of Housing First, who are usually categorised as either being dependent or disruptive or chaotic in terms of clients who present to us. And the provision of accommodation will need to be rather different there. But it also needs to take account of that would not just solely be coming from the housing service. It needs an assessment of wraparound care, clearly from our health colleagues, and there's work that goes on already in terms of health and homelessness and the joint mental health team and the elements of support that we provide. But it's increasing that. It's making that difference, because if that all worked, we wouldn't still be here, and that's where the Scottish Government are coming from. So it's about that proactive engagement and delivery in terms of the service supports to people and harm reduction, all being part of that package, which are not, as I say, just going to be delivered by my services. So that plan is in development because we've only got until the year end, calendar year end, to develop that, and that will in turn come forward to Council, either with the housing allocation policy or separate to that, depending on the workload that involves and the consultation that we need to carry out to counterpart services and the public in general.
Stephen. Just one follow-up. Just one of the red markers as well. I think Councillor Hackett highlighted it previously. Just the education, homelessness through the delivery and education programme. I know they've had exam periods, as I state here, and we've got the school holidays, so I expect in quarter two we'd like to see a more positive.
Yes, you're right. There was certainly, in terms of the term time impact, and also we had a schedule of those sessions during the particularly severe winter weather, so those had to be cancelled at that time. But yes, we expect to report a pick-up in that in subsequent quarters.
Thanks, Derek. just my eyes were drawn to the issue around direct debit payments for council tax, and I'm just wondering what proportion of residents pay their council tax by direct debit, and is there a campaign to up those numbers in the future?
I'll answer the second question first until I find my papers. Yes, we do that as part of the annual billing process, and also we continue to emphasise that point through all our contacts, whether that's home visits or indeed where we need to engage in correspondence with people. It's always the rider about getting that shift to direct debit. Excuse me. We do particularly well in terms of comparisons to direct debits. We are at 76%. We are at 77%. 76 is our target, and we're at 77.4. So we have a pretty decent uptake in terms of direct debit.
Okay. Kevin, just staying on that seems an astounding figure. Rising for 16,318 people paying the direct debit on a 12-monthly basis up to 17,853. That's a rise of about 1,535. It seems a very disproportionate rise when you have a look at the amount of people paying the 10-monthly direct debits went up 57. Over the same period. Are you confident the figures are correct? And if they are, is there any possibility that perhaps there have been, or could the figures include people coming off the 10-monthly that have decided to go into a 12-monthly payments to make things easier for them? It just seems an astounding figure to have jumped.
I'll certainly get confirmation of that position. It may include, as you say, those who've shifted from the 10-month category to the 12. I can't answer that with any certainty today, but I'll come back to you on that. But certainly we have seen, because of the growth of communities, a significant uptake in our council tax take this year in percentage terms, so it does reflect the increased housing stock across all tenures in Midlothian. But I'll verify that position in terms of the actual numbers to you off table.
Thank you. Any other questions for Kevin? Okay. Can we agree to move on then? Thank you, Kevin. We're now moving on to Children's Services 5.8. Mary.
Thank you, Chair. Members, as you can see, Children's Services has made good progress in a number of areas, such as permanence work, making sure that children and young people do not drift in the system, improving mental health of children and young people, ensuring that care experienced children have a voice through an app called Momo, Mind of My Own, steady child protection numbers reflecting the national average. And a key area is the Scottish Abuse Inquiry. We have set up a team in Midlothian which has produced such high quality work that the national team has commented on this work and requested a visit to Midlothian. The challenges are as set out in the report and as discussed earlier within the agenda today, but I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. Questions, comments? Jim?
I think the approach that Midlothian Council has taken to, as Mary keeps quoting about, a Midlothian child is a Midlothian child, and trying to deliver resolutions within Midlothian rather than sending children across the country for services that at the end of the day didn't necessarily improve the outcomes for the child is absolutely the right thing to do. I see it's down here as a challenge. It's an opportunity as well. We're working on a business case to consider alternatives to secure care. Obviously, we're in a situation where, as an authority this size, we don't have, I think I'm right in saying this, Mary, we don't have secure accommodation within Midlothian, so in the event that that's required, we go out with. But it's not necessarily improving the outcomes for the children involved. Looking at delivering that in a different way is the right thing to do. But similar to what's been said in previous conversations about in order to make improvements that help in the long term, you have to keep spending the money currently that you need to spend to keep the service going while investing in improvements for the future with the intention that spending in the future will reduce. It's a difficult, difficult thing to do. But of all the services that we provide, children's services is the important one to do the preventative spend, absolutely. And I think we're starting to see improvements for the children and potential in the long term for financial improvements as well. We need to keep our nerve a bit on that and be prepared to keep moving along that direction because it's the right thing to do.
Okay, thanks for that, Jim. Any other questions? John?
Thanks, Derek. Thanks, Mayor, for the report. I'm just wondering around some of the recruitment issues. What's the policy when a new social worker starts? Will they have their previous experience recognised as part of their terms and conditions? I'm just aware there's a neighbouring authority that insists all their new social workers start at the bottom grade, and that often leads to only newly qualified social workers coming in, whereas more experienced social workers are put off because of that recruitment practice. And I'm just wondering if we have anything similar here or not.
Midlothian's policy for any new starts is that they go to the bottom of the grade. However, if you can make the argument for putting someone up the grade, then you would try and do that. But we have a policy in Midlothian that everybody goes to the bottom of the grade, and it says that on our recruitment paperwork. In terms of recruiting experienced social workers, if people remember back about 8 or 10 years ago, we were actually going to Germany and Spain and all over the country trying to recruit social workers. And it goes in waves. And then we've had quite a steady period within Midlothian where we've had social workers with 5+ years experience. But then people move on, people have babies. So there's been quite a movement just recently, but it's been very difficult to recruit experienced social workers and experienced team leaders. So it's not just social workers, it's team leaders as well. So it's been quite interesting. We grow our own, so we have a very comprehensive policy for when people come in and how they're supported through that induction period and the courses that they need to take. We also offer many courses for our social workers to, go on to do child protection training or mental health training or whatever. So we have a good training programme for our social workers. But unfortunately, sometimes when you train people so well, they then choose to go to these neighbouring local authorities. But I think it's the same for everybody across Scotland. It's just getting the calibre of staff that you want. And I think in Midlothian, what we find, it's best to grow your own and just give them that really good training background.
Thanks, Derek. I think it's great to hear that we are supporting our own staff to come through the ranks, and I think that's definitely the right thing to do. But what this is sort of highlighting is you need them ready out the oven tomorrow, and if that is the case, it strikes me as strange if we're going out to advert saying, look, you're going to start at the bottom of your grade despite your experience. Whereas if that's one of the issues, why don't we just kind of review our recruitment practice around that?
Just to reiterate what Mary said, if a member of staff who is experienced and is coming in can demonstrate that, there is a case that can be made for people to move up. So not everybody necessarily starts at the bottom of the scale, but evidence needs to be provided to the employer for us to make that judgment about the movement up the scale. So there is flexibility within it.
Sorry, Dick. I think the point I'm trying to make is if that's in the advert and it doesn't mention the fact you can, your starting salary can be negotiated. I'll just flick through to the next local authority where they'll say, your experience will be recognised in their advert. And if it is a case of having to kind of change a recruitment policy, we should maybe look at that.
Often in some other posts where there's scale points attributed, there could be a minimum and a maximum salary for that. So that's technically something we could look at within that scale point range. So I'll take that back.
Okay, thank you. We'll now move on to 5.9, Communities and Economy. Mary.
Thank you, Chair. So members will be aware that there's a range of services within communities and economy, covering regulated areas such as planning, building standards, environmental health, trading standards, welfare rights and the communities team. So the progress in quarter one include agreement on the terms of City Deal, which will release £600 million of government's money to promote and achieve inclusive economic growth in the region. Participatory budgeting work to reduce the cost of the school day, and that's been really good, where we've matched up children who should be receiving the free school uniform, free school meals and whatnot, matching them up to try and ensure that everybody that gets their entitlement. So huge piece of work there. Time and Esk Leader Programme, funded by the EU and the Scottish Government, is one of the most successful of the 21 areas in Scotland, with the prospect of additional money being received from other areas that are underspent. High levels of performance in building standards and planning, despite a notable increase in applications for major schemes of development. And we've also received £980,000 for the car scheme in Pennycook, along with the £1,692,000 from the Heritage Lottery Fund to improve Pennycook Town Centre. So really good progress made in this area. Again, the challenges are, like everyone said here, the financial challenge, but again, managing the infrastructure demands of the rapid and substantial new housing development. The supplementary guidance on developer contributions and affordable housing is in progress. Working with Mayfield on the master planning of the town centre, and we've made a good solid start to the Pennycook Town Centre regeneration, but we need more work to be done. Happy to take any questions. I may not have the answers, but I will get Ian to get back to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. Any questions or comments? None? Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mary. As Mary says, if you have any other detailed questions, please feel free to contact Ian. 5.10, Education Quarter 1 Performance Reports. Mary, you're still? Oh, sorry. Hi, Maria.
Thank you, Chair. This report identifies a number of areas of performance we are aiming to do to achieve our vision of creating a world-class education system through excellence and equity. I felt it was really helpful to note, just initially, particularly under the raising attainment and achievement aspect, that we are improving outcomes in terms of curriculum for excellence levels. That includes we are actually increasing by 2% in all areas, and in some areas increasing it by 18%. So we are on track to do this. We do have some areas to work on, and that's an S3 for listening and talking and numeracy. So that's an area we need to develop, and officers are working on that with schools. It's also really helpful to note that through a lot of the PEF funding, we have actually increased in almost all areas by 5% in our CFE levels, in particular in SIMD 1 to 2. So we are actually showing improvements in how children are performing in our most deprived areas. So that's a real positive in terms of education. It's also worth noting that in areas 3 to 8 in SIMD profile, there's improvements in all areas for curriculum for excellence levels. I'm able to report that at the moment because the uplift from the schools is accurate. In terms of the next information I have, the initial exam results are initial, so I just want to say that in this public forum. But at the moment, we are showing still an increasing trend. Our literacy and numeracy has increased over the last 3 years as well. And in addition to that, we are proving that if pupils stay on to S6, we do better with the pupils who stay on in school. However, we do have to improve our 5 at level 3 and our 5 at level 4 and have a real good focus on looked after children, particularly at home. And that's in line with Children's Services, where we are working together to improve those outcomes. There's funding coming, which we'll report on later on at a further meeting, for looked after children and to improve their attainment and achievement. And that's going to be a real focus for us going forward for this year. In addition to that, just to highlight the fact that part of our service is LLE, and that, again, our positive destination measures are at 94.4%, so we're doing really well with kids who stay on, and we work really hard with the 16 to 19-year-olds, and door-knocking, as we call it, to try and get the to make sure that we're supporting young people in getting into a positive destination, whether that be work, employment or further education. So overall, this is a positive report. We've got work to do and we're not complacent, and we're unlikely to show the increase in CFE levels to the same degree next year because we've worked so hard this year in increasing them to where they are, and that's through hard work of officers, and I have to say with the PEF funding has helped in our SIMD profile schools. Happy to take any questions.
Questions, comments? Jim?
Well, I comment first of all on the sustained level of the sustained level of sustained positive destinations around the 96% mark. That's really to be welcomed. It's excellent that we can show a consistency there, that it isn't something that's going to deviate wildly, and that we know because we've discussed it here a number of times is down to the commitment of the individuals and the tenacity and the determination of members of your staff and making sure that they trace individuals and challenge a bit to make sure that they are getting positive destinations where necessary. So that's good to know. I note in the challenges here the implementation of the pupil equity funds that have been directed to paid by the Scottish Government directly to the schools and ensuring that they're actually used for the purpose that they were intended, the closing of the close the equity gap. I know it's a challenge. I know there are also good examples of schools, creative and innovative ways of using that money that definitely does contribute that. And I'm thinking of the financial advice that was funded in the Mayfield area, you know, because we're recognising that the root of a lot of the inequality is that the requirement for assistance in terms of financial advice. One other thing that I note here is the point that's been made under emerging challenges about good financial management and real-time information. I know that in terms of targeting our resources, the education in this council are well ahead in terms of using technology to be able to get information back on the performance of schools and the performance of classes down to the performance of the individual and being able to target resources where they're most needed. But we also need to be able to do that more on a financial basis. We have got real challenges in education and in children's services in terms of potential overspends. It's no good enough to be told at the end or well beyond the end of a quarter that you're in an overspend position. We need to do more to work to get information on the same basis as a business would do and be able to monitor on a sort of weekly basis what the financial position is and when you've still got time to take action to address the issues that are causing it. So I do recognise that in particular as being something that we need to focus on. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Councillor Muirhead. Just to say, in terms of the PEF funding, because that goes directly to schools, obviously we guide them in how they are to spend that money. I have to say the schools have been really diligent in terms of how they've done it and really creative in how they're spending their money. We also have gathered together a report, and one of the aspects that we are looking at with the financial accountants is actually how we can always improve in terms of how we're matching up that funding and being financially aware going forward for the best value audit. So we are working on that, but thanks for your positive comments.
Thanks, Derek. This is a very encouraging report, and there are a lot of improvements which we've been seeing over a number of quarters now, so it makes very good reading. I wonder if I could also focus on the emerging challenges and risks. A straightforward question, do we actually have any Gaelic provision in Midlothian, an area where Gaelic is not traditional? I'm puzzled by this. I appreciate its importance in certain parts of Scotland, but it's certainly not the language that was ever spoken in this part of Scotland, and I'm just wondering if we intend to develop that. I maybe should know, I'm not quite clear now what's happening about this named person business, which seems to have been ongoing for some time. And finally, on the recruitment, I think it's encouraging that a lot of efforts have been made to improve the number of primary teachers. I'm aware it's still very challenging, and I'm wondering if we would ever give any thought to offering any kind of incentive if the situation did not improve significantly. I know some authorities have done this. I'm thinking in terms, obviously, here of things like relocation and trying to help people get accommodation in the area. I realise we're not at that level at the moment, but I wonder if any thinking has been going on that. Those were my 3 points. Thanks, Leader.
Thank you for that. If I take it backwards in terms of the teacher numbers, it's at the moment we're only looking at 4 vacancies in primary and 11 in secondary, so actually overall we're doing pretty well, so it's quite a positive picture for us. So at this moment in time, no, we haven't had a discussion about enhancement because we're not failing, we need it. But, you know, it's about good quality people, and I think a lot of our conversations are with the initial teacher training colleges about getting that quality rather than enhancement. So that's on that one. On the named person legislation, obviously that is still going through and still being discussed. We have a key adult within Midlothian, so we always have that trusted or key adult, which operates at the same kind of level, but we need to kind of understand that at the end of the day, this is about protecting and safeguarding children. So whatever we have to do in order to do that, we will, and I think our schools and our children's services are committed to that, and that's the basic principles. Most of the named person legislation was stopped because of data and the information sharing code, so we are kind of waiting on more and further information from the Scottish Government to take that forward. Lastly, I hope I've got this one right, being the new girl, we don't have Gaelic provision in Midlothian at the moment that I'm aware of. We certainly don't have a school that has that. So, and Gaelic, is the demands on Gaelic is about full immersion, and I'm not convinced that in many places they actually provide that, apart from up north, having come from Edinburgh beforehand as well. Okay.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, move on. Thank you, Maria. Now we move on to 5.11, commercial operations, John.
Thanks, Chair. Before I begin the first of the three performance reports within the Directorate, I just need to mention to Cabinet the backdrop of the critical financial position, the fact that we're fastest growing local authority in Scotland, the need to continually transform services and the increasing service demands. In response to the financial position, we've established an in-year recovery plan that was reported to Business Transformation Steering Group yesterday and will be reported to Council on the 2nd of October. Chair, with yours and the committee's indulgence, that's been enough doom and gloom. I will focus on some positives within each of the three services. So, firstly, turning to commercial operations, we're looking to maximise the use of all resources. Muller Hill Waste Facility is due to open in the autumn, which is a major event for the area, working in partnership with Edinburgh Council. Within Land Services, we're continuing to secure funding and undertake additional contracts. Within our Travel Services, we've undertaken a route and branch review involving the freight transport service of our internal fleet. And within Health and Safety and Contingency Planning, we're progressing training to various outside organisation. And finally, in roads, at long last, we progressed decriminalised parking, which was introduced in Midlothian in April 2018. I don't intend to dwell on the charging and commercial operations, but I'll pause there if your committee has any questions before I move on to the next report, Chair.
Anybody any questions in that area? John?
Thanks, sir. It was more a comment. Just thank you, John and Ricky and the staff for the report and the work they've done over the last quarter. Just to report back to Cabinet, the roads collaboration unfortunately hasn't met recently, but that's an area that I would like to continue working with our neighbouring local authorities on. And winter maintenance, there wasn't a lot of feedback from the community around the winter maintenance sort of proposals. I know members will be in contact with local community councils and you get a lot of feel for things on the ground, but it's also important, I think, for people to kind of formally put in their views, and I'd encourage folk, don't hold back, as the next council meeting will be hopefully bringing a paper around winter maintenance, so there's a small window there for folk to get in touch with either the local elected member or the Rhodes team on that issue. But thank you.
Yeah, nobody does say very much at this time of year about the winter maintenance, but they're quite quick at the back end, the first bit of snow or ice that comes to comment quite heavily on the winter maintenance scheme. John, what's your initial thoughts or feedback on the decriminalised parking? I've got to say, I didn't think I've ever seen traffic wardens coming into an area and being so warmly shaken by the hand and welcomed into an area. What has been the response? Do you have any indication on whether or no we will make a profit, break even, or make a loss? I know there was quite a bit of kind of guesswork in there at the start.
Yeah, in terms of the second part of your question, Leader, we're above the financial target in terms of fines received compared to anticipated fines, and that seems to be continuing, so we'll be reporting that through the quarter monitoring. In terms of the decriminalised parking, it's generally been welcomed throughout the county. There was a wee bit of a rumble at the beginning, but the place feels safer. They're going out to some of the rural communities. I'm just feeling and hearing fairly positive stuff about it. Also, more importantly, our people are safer. Walking about Dalkeith at lunchtime in any other county town, you feel a lot safer. And it was always a worry of mine that something may happen because of some of the absolute shocking indiscriminate parking in our town centre. So I think it's to be welcome that keeps Midlothian moving.
Any other questions on the commercial side? Okay, John, do you want to touch on the finance and outreach service?
Yep, again, with your indulgence, I'll try and focus on the positives. Cabinet will be aware that anticipation going to Council in October with the capital strategy following the seminar it's scheduled for the 18th of September. That is a significant piece of work, slightly delayed compared to our initial aspirations, but we're going there. The financial strategy reported to Council continues to focus the attention of both the Council and the management team. Within workforce, developing and progressing healthy lives across our workforce, health and wellbeing is becoming a major part of our psyche. In terms of digital centres excellence, got to take the first opportunity to mention the new battle centre. It's not been mentioned today. Normally everybody wants a bit of the credit, but I think that showed the council working well together, and it's another generational building in our community, another legacy. And associated with that, through the support of the council and the communities, we're actually in the process of demolishing the existing facilities, which mitigates any risks and gives opportunities. So again, leader and colleagues, don't intend focusing on the challenges, but I'll pause there if members have any questions.
Any questions for John at this stage? Okay, John, do you just want to rush out the last one? Property facilities management.
Yes, property facilities management. We're beginning to get back to an even keel in the first quarter of 2018-19. In the last 6 months of last year, we were a struggle because my colleague Gary Sherritt was going under a medical procedure. And I think now we're beginning to re-energise ourselves massively under Gary's leadership. Within facility services, introduced parent pay, which is making a difference within our school and how we deal with transactions. The leisure management system is being rolled out and will allow us to come forward with data and management information. The age and well team are dealing with keeping people in my age and older fitter. Within sport and leisure, Destination Hull End has been approved to progress by the council, and within property assets, we had an extremely positive meeting with Shawfair last week, and I'm hoping to be in a position to report through planning in November and into council in December with the land deal. Now, I've said that before and it has been fraught, but I'm feeling upbeat following a really positive meeting. So again, leader and members, I'll pause there if colleagues have any questions.
Any questions, comments? Trying to get enough easy time out of the day. Okay, John, thank you for that. But now it takes us on to 5.14, Midlothian Council Performance. Grace.
Thank you. I'm committed to making Midlothian a great place to grow, following on from all of the individual Service 1 reports. The purpose of this report is to provide the overall summary for the Council as we deliver the priorities through the CPP in order to reduce the gap in learning outcomes, health outcomes and economic circumstances. And the key approach which we will continue to use as our focus about how the Council delivers services are based on preventative intervention, co-production and capacity building and localising or modernising access to our services. And as you know, the Single Midlothian Plan incorporates the five overarching thematic themes, and within there, some of the highlights across quarter one. I think it's important that we've gathered that together, and we show that in pages 210 to 218 of your pack. I think it's important to note that since I took up post on the 1st of August, I've been sending out a weekly message to all staff in order to share our key messages, but also to highlight and celebrate the many successes across the Council and to thank staff for their hard work each week. In Midlothian, we are truly committed to making a difference, and this week's message focused on our five people values, which are celebrate, respect, excellence, support and together. And our people values are central to building a culture of ambition and also excellence across the Council, particularly as we face unprecedented financial challenges combined with the rapid demographic growth which we are experiencing year on year. In addition, managing the impact of a number of national and local challenges, which the directors and heads of service have spoken about today. It's therefore, I think, at this particular time, essential that we work together as one council to deliver holistic services so that we build our shared endeavour which delivers life-changing impacts for the individual citizens and communities of Midlothian. And I'm happy to take any questions.
Any questions for Grace? Our presentation. As members are aware, that there have been numerous questions asked on various issues that have been in front of us here today, and John makes quite rightly the point of the serious financial situation we're in, Sahan, that I think we've majored on over the last couple of weeks about how we have to make sure that we're based on court. With that in mind, if there are no further questions, we're happy to bring the meeting to a halt. Okay, thank you for your attendance.